All right, so I want to appreciate Dr. Green's presentation. We've had lots of talks at our public health department and in our county about return on investment in public health. And one of the things I will say, when you talk about investment, one of the things that we end up running into, an investment usually means that you have a vision for what you want to see. And unfortunately, sometimes it's tied to politics. And in politics, we know that our politicians aren't there for a long period of time to see that vision through. So we're forced to come up with things that actually show more immediate value. That long-term sort of down the line, what happens with a mom and her pregnancy and what happens with the child later on in life, sometimes, you know, the same folks who want to see that happen aren't around during that time. So we struggle with what do we need to do in order to, you know, show that we do have value, and investing in public health is something that should be done. So one of the things that we wanted to do, of course, I have no disclosures. One of the things that we wanted to do was really sort of look at quality improvement and try to figure out what could we do and say about our programs and the services that we provide that can show a more immediate impact in terms of that service being provided in the way that it's provided. So this is a bit of an outline of the presentation that I'm going to show, but I'm really going to focus in on the objectives of the talk, and that's really around what does it take to do quality improvement in public health, what's that value, and what are some challenges as we run into it. Before I get into that, so everybody should know what quality improvement is, but if you don't, it's a deliberate and defined process in terms of looking at improvement. When you look at it for public health, it's much more specific around the quality of services and the processes in terms of having an impact on health and achieving equity, meaning those differences in health that we see, the services that we provide, are we changing that gap that we see within the community in terms of health? Now, in order to understand sort of how we started in this, we have to kind of go back a little bit. It wasn't that we just woke up one day and said, we want to do quality improvement. You know, it took us a bit to sort of take our vision, which was around health equity, and that's that everyone in Alameda County, no matter who you are, where you live, how much money you make, or the color of your skin, has the same opportunities to lead a healthy, productive, and fulfilling life. Okay? Now, keeping that vision in mind, you can understand that it's not going to be the health department that completely drives that. There are many more people that become involved when we're talking about achieving health equity. And so this journey for us started way back in 2006 with a lot of planning, 2.5 years of trying to figure out, if we have this vision, what do we need to do as a health department in order to achieve that? And so we ended up coming up with some strategic directions. There were six. One was we had to transform our organizational culture and align our daily work in order to achieve health equity. That means that a program that was providing services had to sort of think, is this closing the gap that we see in health outcomes? The second was that we had to enhance our communications, both internally and externally with partners, to sort of foster this idea of health equity. It's one thing to say services are being provided. It's another to say that we're actually closing the gap, and so those that most need it are actually getting much better in comparison to those who are healthy and don't need it at all. The third thing is to ensure that the organization was accountable and that we had measurable outcomes and community involvement. Our department is very much involved in the community and trying to work with them on solutions, recognizing that oftentimes they bring the problem to us that we don't see because they live it day in and day out. But they also want to say that, look, you come and survey us and you do all these things, but we don't see the outcomes. So we wanted to be clear about what that was, and we wanted to make sure that we were accountable as a public organization. Fourth was supporting the development of our workforce. It's one thing to put a vision out. It's another thing to have them really understand it, grab it, hold it, and try to achieve it as well. And there are a number of skills that come into play when you talk about working very closely with the community. Fifth was around policies that really looked at the social conditions for improving health. For California, we have a number of functions that are listed in regulation for our local health department as basic health services. And as I looked at it closely when I became a health officer and health director, one thing in there was that I was supposed to talk about the social factors that impact health. That's standard. Not something we often talk about, but is definitely in regulation for us. So I use that as a shield. Last, we had to make sure that we cultivated and expanded our partnerships so that we had a community-driven approach and was innovative with partners coming into play that may not have come into play before. So all of this ended up that we ended up having five work groups, and these five work groups focused specifically on strategic directions. A couple highlights in terms of looking at the communication group, they looked at how do we communicate with staff, how do we communicate with community, what things do we need to have in place. For community partnerships, they actually developed a toolkit and training materials based on what staff needed in order to get involved with community. So some tools for them to work with community because that's one of our directions. Around the policy arena, the policy work group was creating a division and programmatic policy reporting tool and a protocol in terms of how do you identify policy, look at policy, or consider policy impacting the work that you do. The Measuring Success Group, which I co-chaired at the time with our director, was really looking at what is the thing that we use to as a tool or a method for measuring our success. We recognized that it had to be standard. When we looked at quarterly reports that we had from all of the programs, the reports were very different. It wasn't this sort of standard, like I could look and say, okay, I go here, I can see this, or I go here, I can see that. They were very different, so we wanted to have something standard to help measure the impact of our work. Workforce development, we're still working on this last thing here to be, you know, one of the best companies to work for. But they were really looking at what does the workforce need in order to be successful in the work that they do. So the Measuring Success Work Group, again, was looking at, you know, a process that could be used across the department to standardize, you know, planning and measuring performance. Now, one of the keys in this was it still had to be able to hold the community in the process, and it also had to keep that vision of health equity. And so as we looked at different things, we went through logic models and results-based accountability in rigorous debate, months of debate. And we ultimately ended up with results-based accountability because it was the simplest of things that we could see and also allowed for the community to be involved in creating what the vision looked like for that program or the service or for health outcomes in terms of achieving health equity. So how many of you know what results-based accountability is? Okay, one, two, okay. All right, so it's really, I would say, you know, a disciplined way of talking about what you want to achieve and then getting to action. And it's actually fairly quick and fairly simple. It can be used by anybody. It can be used by an individual or it can be used by an organization or even a system or a particular geographic area. But basically, it helps us to sort of say, this is what we want to achieve. How do we measure that impact and move toward making that impact happen? So in a nutshell, one of the things that we always ran into was that, you know, our programs were taking on huge problems. So if we have a program related to low birth rates, then that program was being held accountable for all the birth rates for the whole county. But they weren't serving the whole county. And so we often saw that a program will take on and be, you know, held accountable for something that they are not even touching in the grandest of schemes in terms of the widest geographic area for the whole population. So one of the reasons we liked results-based accountability is because it broke down accountability in two ways. One was population and the second was performance. But it also sort of had this language discipline, which I don't know how many times you've been in a meeting where you hear 10 different things. Some of them are ideas, some of them are strategies, some of them are objectives, some of them are goals. You hear all these different terms, and you're having circular conversations. It's not focused, and you know, you're just confused at the end of the day. You don't know what happened. So the language discipline here is that for population accountability, and I'll explain what that is, it's results and indicators. Okay, the results you want to achieve or the condition of well-being that you want to achieve. And an indicator is really a large geographic area, not everybody that you would touch as a program, but for a performance measure, that's who you touch in your program. That is your particular measure. It's a customer result. The third thing in that, when you look at performance measures, there were three ways to look at it. You know, we often have reports and we see how much did you do. So how many services did you provide? How many people did you see? But the is anyone better off question is often not even asked for, often not measured, but it is definitely something that's in the back of people's minds. The assumption is that you provide this service, it happens, they're good. Okay. So ultimately, this whole process really boils down to 7 questions. And I've tested this, and it can actually be done in an hour. It yields you to have baselines, and then you go through what's called a turning the curve exercise using these 7 questions to get to the results that you want to achieve. So with this, unlike the logic model, this starts with the end in mind. So simple. Where do you want to go? What is it that you want to see? And what you want to see is not an activity, but it's a condition of well-being. What is it that you want to see? If your program is provided in the way that it should be provided, what will happen with the clients that go through it? Okay. So you start with that in mind, and that actually helps to build consensus when we're talking about working with partners and community so that we all understand where it is that we're going to. And then identifying, you know, what strategies and actions that will come into play, partners, et cetera, that all is part of that process. So again, for population accountability, the ends are conditions of well-being for family, children, and community as a whole. And for programs, it's the ends are how customers are better off when the program works the way it should. Okay. So these are the 7 questions. I won't leave them up here for long, but this is around population accountability. And this is a question that's asked of a whole geographic area, whether it's a city, a county, a neighborhood, or a particular subpopulation. But it's not, it's everybody that could be touched but may not be touched necessarily. For performance accountability, this is really about the program. These are the 7 questions that they go to. Who are our customers? How can we measure if our customers are better off? Sort of thinking through what it is that we do and how would we measure it. And notice, the measurement starts early on. Okay, understanding what measure you're looking for, we've actually found that actually galvanizes people around seeing their ability to contribute to impacting that measure. But the important thing here is really that this is about the customers and not everybody in the county. So really focused in on the population that you have a chance of touching. In summary, sort of looking at results-based accountability and the differences between the two, for our department, it wasn't that we just wanted to have the programs figure out their measures in terms of impact, but we also, as a department, wanted to think about our responsibility is to lead on a number of different things, and we don't control everything in terms of the services that could be provided. But we want to create a vision of what the results are. We want to have some standard indicators so that we can galvanize not only our public and private partners, but the community to say, yes, those are the things that we want to achieve, and then figure out what actually works, what strategies actually work. And so that's really around population. Now, when you get down to performance measures, this is where you get into the programs. So the strategies may be identified, and so as the program implements those strategies in whatever way they do it, their measurement of the impact or what happens with the population going through that, are they better off, is the performance measure. But this is how all tie together. So the program can see the impact that they're having contributes to a larger population indicator, which helps them to actually feel much better about what they do and much more in control of what they do. So some of the benefits that we've seen, again, is really getting from talk to action very quickly. It's actually very interesting. The hardest part of this is actually coming up with the result. Okay, having a group of people in a room that come from diverse disciplines and saying, what is it that we all agree that we want to achieve is actually the hardest part. After that, it's pretty easy. Okay, but it definitely helps to build the collaboration and consensus among various stakeholders. I haven't had many arguments at all during these discussions because everybody can sort of see themselves and has contributed to what that ultimate vision looks like, what results they want to see, and what measures actually are going to be chosen for that. But one of the things with results-based accountability is there are certain tools inside of it that actually help you choose the most appropriate indicators. You don't choose everything. Okay? You could have 20 indicators that all sound good, but maybe only 5 of those are collected regularly, and maybe only 4 of those actually does everybody understand. And so you want to make sure that you can understand it, that it also has an ability to say something about what you want to achieve. And so they have some tools in there to help with that. So for us, in terms of what we did, we actually trained 30 folks within the department across the various divisions to learn this process and be able to teach it to others. Now, we had to have some criteria, so it couldn't be just everybody. If you didn't want to talk in front of the in front of people, we couldn't have you do this, okay, because you definitely have to talk. But you also wanted you to have some interest in quality improvement because it really is something that takes a keen interest in learning and doing. So we had Mark Friedman, who is the creator of results-based accountability, come out and did a two-day train and trainer. And the champions, we also created a measuring success work group, so they would come and talk about what things they were running into as they were implementing this with programs, and also to practice learning the skills a little bit more. Okay. In order to support this, we had to maintain that there was a learning community, so problem solving amongst partners, and also assistance with partners. So if one person in the division couldn't get to something or needed some help, then the others from other divisions would help as well. And we had to make sure that we had resources in one place. Also, in order to get this rolling within our department, the fact that we said accountability scared everybody automatically. You know, they felt like if I'm not doing well, then my program's going to be cut, my funding's going to be moved, I'm going to get, you know, transferred, fired, whatever. And my message to them is, no, that's not the issue. If you're doing bad, that's fine. But if you don't know why and you're not trying to get out of it, that's where the problem lies. Okay. And so this allows them to sort of think through things and think about partners that may be involved. One of the things in this, in terms of our support for this, we had to make sure that we changed something in the system. It was one thing that we said it, another thing to teach people about it. But if nothing changed department-wide around how they sort of pushing them systematically to use it, it wasn't happening very fast. So we have this directory, which we call the programs, or PISA, the Programs, Initiatives, and Services and Activities Directory, which has a database of all the programs and activities and initiatives we have, the populations that they serve, the geographic location. And we've now tweaked it to have some of the same language around results-based accountability in it. So the how much did we do, how well do we do it, and is anyone better off is in there. But they also get to tell us why something is happening with whatever that measure is. And we're not looking at just simply a point in time, but we're looking at a trend. So if things are remaining the same, why are they remaining the same? If they're getting worse, why are they getting worse? So to give us an idea of what's the story behind that trend that we're seeing. And then to have them consciously think about, if this is what I'm doing and this is what's happening, what do I need to do in the next quarter to do better? What do I need to do to have a better impact on the clients that we serve? And so they'll report on this on a quarterly basis, so every 3 months. But it forces a little bit of planning ahead of time, not just the end of the year, here's my report, this is how bad things were, now I got to do it again. Okay. So in the database, this is sort of what it looks like just initially to have the programs put in just the measure itself, not necessarily the number. The blue up top is actually stuff that's already in the PISA directory, so they don't have to repeat stuff, it just pulls it over from the other part. So what will a quarterly report look like? Here's a model of it. So at the top you see it's the program, so if I'm looking at this, I know what the program is about, kind of what it does, and I know what they're trying to achieve in terms of their main client result. But I'll also know in terms of five measures around how much they do, how well they do it, and is anyone better off. Now, in here, again, it's going to be a trend. So if you look at the data for this quarter, you'll see quarter one, quarter two, quarter three. Quarter three is the current quarter, and that's bolded. So we can see what things are happening, whether they're going up or down, better or not. And also the story behind the performance of that measure. So give an idea of what's happening, you know, what happened in this. So if you look at performance measure number one, you'll see that the number of referrals jumped up, and it's because we partnered with an insurer. So the insurer is directly referring clients to us, and it's not just coming through the doctor. It's not clients finding us directly. And so how do we track that? We know it's from the program referral log, and how often is it collected? We know it's on a daily basis. It's just to give us an idea of how quickly things are being collected. And so they'll do this, and then at the end, you'll notice performance measure number five. That's an is anyone better off measure, and that's the percent reduction in emergency room visits at 1 year. So that means the program saw the client. A year later, what happened to that client? Did that information stick? Did whatever actions they taught them hold? Notice in this one, as an example, they don't have that data. Okay, it's okay. We say to programs, if it's something that you want but you don't have, go ahead, work towards it, and tell us what you're doing. So on the bottom row there, you see the status of work to get the performance measure if needed. So in this one, they're going to meet with the scheduled insurer to identify the best measure, the data source, and if it's available for use in terms of for that particular measure. So it allows them to sort of think and actively grow. Okay. So some of the challenges, and I'll skip through a lot of these. The nuts and bolts of this, we trained 30 people. They weren't the division directors. Some of them were program managers. They were supposed to work with the division directors. We had this funny thing where the division director was waiting for the champion to come talk to him. The champion was waiting for the division director to come talk to him. They hadn't talked, and even though they were working and expecting it. The other thing is we still had to get people comfortable with the process itself and also with the language and understand that really you're not going to get burned because you're doing bad, but just tell us why you're doing bad and what you're doing in order to change that. The other challenge with this, again, and a lot of it is because we hadn't changed the quarterly report format up to this point, it really wasn't an impetus for a program to say, oh, I really have to do this. It was like, oh, well, there's a new director, there's a new thing, it'll go away, I just need to wait it out. So our programs are moving in that fashion, and our department ultimately will have a results-based accountability formatted report as well. The difficulty in all this is really that fourth quadrant. That fourth quadrant is anyone better off? Oftentimes, again, these things aren't measured. Many programs, it's the things that they really want to know, but they aren't measured. So they really have to work on that and make it sustainable. Let's see. In terms of things we've had programs talk about, is anyone better off? Much more often, partners talk about it. They're also talking about achieving health equity more often. And let's see, what I'll leave you with. Thank you. In general, the important thing is this, one, that you train folks, that you support it, but you also have to change something within the system of how you operate in order to have that happen. And it has to be repeated. There has to be significant support and discussion. And even with my managers, I'll ask them some of those same questions about their division. You know, what are your top five, you know, population indicators that your division is trying to achieve? So that it's both from the top and from the programs up in terms of that language in order to really change culture, because that's what we're really trying to do with implementing quality improvement.